Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om ajnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya. Chakshur nilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Nama shreshtam manamapi shachiputra matra swarupam. Rupam tasya graja murupuring maturim goshtavatim. Radha kundam girivaramaho radhika madhavasham. Prapto yasya pratita kripaya shri gurum tamnatosmi. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yataf Parikamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangs Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagarna Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagarna Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitangs Cha Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continue on the subject of Tirtha Yatra, pilgrimage, under the general heading of understanding the name Tirthaka. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who makes tirthas, or who has them in his hand. Now, I'm going to read from a book by a scholar, not a Vaishnav, one of the class of people who go to universities, especially in the West, become interested in things not related with their home culture and venture off to distant lands to do an anthropological analysis of these different phenomena that they come across in various countries. So the author writes, it has been suggested that the institution of Hindu pilgrimage became especially prominent in the post-Vedic period because the costs of Vedic sacrifices were so high that ordinary people could not hope to earn the fruits of such sacrifices. The rishis are said to have popularized pilgrimages because of the inability of the masses to participate in these Vedic rites. Pilgrimage became one of the most extensive forms of religious practice in India. Post-Vedic period, they have this idea that there was a Vedic period and a post-Vedic period, and before that, I guess people were just running around uncivilized. Whatever their conception of civilized is, that's the way scholars think. Here's a quote from Srimad Bhagavatam. Barhayite te nayane nararnam lingani vishnor na nirikshato ye padao nirnam tau druma janma bhajao kshetrani nanu vrajato harer yau. The Srila Prabhupada's translation. The eyes which do not look at the symbolic representations of the personality of Godhead, Vishnu, his forms, name, quality, etc., are like those printed on the plumes of a peacock. And the legs which do not move to the holy places where the Lord is remembered are considered to be like tree trunks. Considered to be like tree trunks in the sense that tree trunks don't generally move unless they're in Vrindavan. Trees don't generally move around from place to place. One of the characteristics by which a tree can be defined is in a fixed place. Whereas humans and other mammals, reptiles, some reptiles, birds have legs by which they can move from place to place. So if the idea is that in human life, if one does not use the legs to go to holy places connected with the Supreme Lord Vishnu, then you might as well just be a tree, because what's the point of going here and there without going to the places connected with Vishnu? We also have in the Srimad Bhagavatam the statement of Lord Krishna, Yatirta buddhi salilena karhi jidjaneshva vigneshu sa eva gokara. That persons who think that their pilgrimage is complete by bathing in water, that's to be extrapolated, it doesn't exactly say bathing, it says water. To be extrapolated from this is that persons who do not associate with the saintly people there, then they are certainly saeva gokara. They're certainly a cow or an ass in terms of intelligence. And of course this was spoken by Lord Krishna at a massive pilgrimage where people had come from all over India to Kurukshetra at the time of the solar eclipse. Now, probably the scholars will say, you see, this was written, the Srimad Bhagavatam was written afterwards, and how do you know it was written afterwards? Because it describes about pilgrimage, but pilgrimage didn't start till later. They theorized the pilgrimage came later, and on the basis of that they theorized Bhagavatam, and there are so many things. They make their theories. There may be some truth in this, nevertheless. Give credit where it's due. There may be some, because there was a time when yajñas were more prominent in Vedic society, what we would call Vedic society, and what generally is called Hindu society, although the word Hindu, as you know, didn't come into vogue until after the Puranas were written. It's not anywhere in the Vedas, in the Shruti. It's not a Sanskrit word at all, although some people have attempted to retro-somethingly make it a Sanskrit word. But there may be something in that. Certainly with the advent of mass transport, the pilgrimage tradition has picked up a lot, because people can move around more easily than they used to. And it may be that previously pilgrimage was done mostly by older people, vanaprastas, renunciants, sannyasis. That's much later, but than the so-called Vedic period. But we've learned in Chaitanya Bhagavat of one Tirthik Brahman, a brahmana who just traveled from pilgrimage place to pilgrimage place, and he came to Navadvip, and he couldn't eat anything, because whatever he cooked, he wanted to offer to his deity. But his deity Gopal, he didn't recognize that the same Gopal is this little baby Nimai who would always come and spoil his offerings by eating from it. So it went on all day and night. He cooked, Nimai would come and take a little and spoil the offering, spoil it. It seemed like that. And then right up till night time, it went like this. When there was no one else awake, only the baby and the brahmana. And at that time, the baby revealed who he actually is. He's not any ordinary little boy. He's the same person who the brahmana worships. So there may have brahmanas, older people, on some special occasion, like the solar eclipse, people may go for pilgrimage. The Pandavas went on a pilgrimage. What are you going to do in 12 years? Well, we could go on pilgrimage. And Balaram went on pilgrimage for prayaschitta, for absolving his apparent sin. Not actually a sin, but acting like an ordinary person. So it may not have been just like nowadays. We'll find, just like at Karumandarai, the local villagers get together and hire a bus and go to Tirupati every year. So that kind of thing, the village people coming together, that may not have been there, and that may have been facilitated more by modern transport also. Otherwise, maybe more local, just like Pandharpur, that tradition is there. People walk every month or at least once a year, but they don't walk from Bengal. It's only within a certain radius that people do that. Nowadays Tirthayatra has become very common, but previously to go on a long pilgrimage, someone may go to a local place of pilgrimage, and that's quite possible in India because there are so many holy places. But if one, for instance, if one wants to go to Badrinath, it's not the kind of thing you're going to do every year, because it may take you more than a year to go there, depending which part of India you're in. It's very difficult also, and especially for householders. They're not likely to go on pilgrimage to such a major place unless they're close to it. They're not likely to go more than once a year. The pilgrimage tradition has expanded so much that we find that the bus companies, these buses which are hired from companies, probably most of their most of their business is probably, I'd have to ask a bus company owner, is from, the ones which hire out buses, they're bus companies which do regular routes for local transport or even interstate or something, Salem to Chennai, like that. But there are companies which just, they're chartered buses, and then must be mostly for pilgrimage, I would think. There may be also some marriage party, something like that. But I would think it's mostly for pilgrimage. And it's a big thing sometimes. The whole train, you see, is decorated, especially these ayappas, as we call them. They put all... Oh, that's a huge thing, isn't it? So many tempos, and mostly not in very big groups. It's mostly like that, isn't it? Tempos, and with seat about 12 or 15 people seated, and then in the trains also say they put garlands outside. And not only up, everywhere, Hindus, Jains, Muslims, I guess, I don't see so many on trains like that. with modern transport and also modern roads, just like Badrinath is more accessible than it used to be, much more so. And people are taking advantage of it. Now here's another quote from the same scholar, and this gives some insight into the dangers of being an armchair scholar, that you just hear about things or you imagine things but you don't actually check it out. And of course everyone can make mistakes, but anyway, listen to this. There's some serious mistake in the sentence that I'm about to read. The high Himalayan shrines are no longer accessible to the hearty few alone, but may be reached by pilgrimage bus lines that puff up the roads to the shrines of Badrinath and Kedarnath, to the source of the river Ganga at Gangotri, and the source of the Yamuna at Yamunotri. What's wrong with that sentence? There's no road up to the source of... The source of the Ganga is not actually Gangotri, it's Gomukh. And there's no bus can go there. And also to Yamunotri. If you're strong, you can walk. Otherwise, you have to hire people to carry, or a mule to carry you. So, you didn't know. Now you know. Or it didn't register. Package tours? Yeah, I mentioned that, right? There, you see on the internet. Tirupati, 3 days, 2 nights, 4 people, Hamdo Hamaredo, family, or 7,221 rupees, something like that. They're suffering now, all these people, all these companies. The pilgrimage business, it must be a huge part of the Indian economy, major part of the Indian economy. In India, with tourism, if you say tourism, you go to see something, Tours and Travels, the shop. Now in the West, if you go, it'll be, where do you want to go? To the Riviera Beach or go to Disneyland. But Tours and Travels company in India means going on pilgrimage to a holy place. And now they're diversifying a bit with all this Statue of Unity. And, well, they have water parks in Chennai and probably elsewhere and this and that. They have skiing in Manali and up in Himalayas. A few people do that kind of thing. And what is that? This boats? You go in the, what's that? The rapids? Rapid rafting and all that. But for the huge majority of people, tour means yatra. Yatra means tour, means to go to a holy place. That's their business. Interesting. The scholar writes, there are. You can have a packaged tour. It takes quite some time to go to all of Badrinath, Rameshwaram, Puri, Dwaraka. Whole group, they'll take on a tour. And have videos as you go of all the different holy places. Now listen, this is interesting. India is a land of, they're reading from the scholar again. India is a land of innumerable tirthas, and on any given day literally millions of pilgrims are on the road. Maybe that's a bit of an exaggeration to say millions. Not every day of the year. Especially during the rainy season, you may not find so many, but quite possible during the holiday season, which is coming up. But now the whole country is on holiday. Unpleasant holiday. Lockdown. Except the police and the doctors are having a really hard time. But it's a fact that especially in May, when most of India, the school holidays... And then literally millions of people may be on pilgrimage. And they may combine it also, just like you may visit your in-laws who live in Jaipur, and then you go to visit Radha Govind. You go to visit your in-laws, and then you go and Radha Govinda Darshan. They'll do. So it may be combined, like that. Or a very common way, one may go to one holy place, and then you pick up on the way also. Just like if you go on the four Chardham pilgrimage to Rameshwaram, Dwaraka, Puri, and Badrinath, it's not that you do, it's not non-stop, you don't take a non-stop bus ride all the way from Rameshwaram to Dwaraka, or whichever way. But they'll stop at the holy places on the way. And there are plenty of them. Then the journey is calculated. This day we'll go so far, we'll stop in this place, and like that. So like that, people may go on pilgrimage, just a general pilgrimage. There may be general pilgrimage in for the sense that like going on the Chardham pilgrimage, it's generally for increasing one's punya, for diminishing one's sinful activities, for general well-being and the blessings of God, or going every year to Tirupati to get the blessings of God, like that. The idea is that usually people they don't have very deep philosophical understanding of what they're doing. Philosophy doesn't come in the picture at all. It's just some general piety that they feel to visit such places. Otherwise, people may go for some special purpose also. And certain places are famous for certain things, especially at Tirumala. It's right there in the Mahatmya, how the Lord has come here. He has a debt. You have to give him some money, and he'll give you more back. I don't know how that works out logically, because if he can give you more back, then how has he got a debt? But anyway, you don't have to think about things like that if you're a Hindu, because everything's possible. So for money especially, Tirupati, very famous. And then for healing, holy places for healing. Those are very big in the West. Lourdes, I mentioned that, in France, is famous for healing. Impossible diseases get healed sometimes. And Knock in Ireland, not so well known, specialize in healing. For having children, married couples who don't have children, at Manargudi, Santana Gopal, then in Manargudi, that's near to Kumbakonam, is it not? Yeah. Then Santana Venugopal Swami Temple near Mysore, Lakshmi Varaha Narasimha at Simhachalam, you'll see there's a certain pillar you're supposed to tie, string around and do some rituals, bang a coconut and this and that. And I guess it must work, otherwise people wouldn't continue to come over hundreds of years. What about Gaur-Nitai here?
There were some rumors.
They have a reputation, huh? Gaur-Nitai have a reputation among the local people. You're not having children? Come and see them. There you go. Another reason is to bring the ashes of one's father to a holy river. They're probably going to make that illegal soon, aren't they? Everything that people did for centuries, they're making it illegal. Now it's illegal to go to a holy place right now. It's supposed to be temporary. I hope they don't make it permanent. I don't think they can do. There's some places they specialize in death and Gaya, going to offer Shraddh in Gaya. Here in South India, what are the big places for Shraddh? Rameshwara. Kashi. It's famous. If you can't die in Kashi, then at least get your ashes scattered there. Some people may go for spiritual purification. Not so many. I'll discuss that. But the Mahatmyas of the holy places, they say that one's sins are cleared away. They are the Saptaita Moksha Dayika, the holy place, seven holy places. They give moksha, so people know that also. Maybe for some spiritual emancipation. Maybe mixed. It's like buy two, get one free, or get one free, something like that. I'm going for some material benefit, but anyway, might get liberated also. Moksha, Dayika, they're all female, huh? All the holy places. Mathura, female, one of them. Kanchi, female. All the deities are females of the holy places. Generally, the earth herself is female. The rivers are female. They're very kind. They forgive all the sins unconditionally, like a mother. They're very tolerant. So many people come and dump their sins and maybe not even behave properly there, but still they're very kind. So it's the female deities of the holy places. Sometimes if you ask people, another study which I read of some researcher from Cambridge University in the early 1970s, I read his PhD thesis, asking people why they come on pilgrimage, and most of them, or many of them, they never really thought why they come on pilgrimage. It's just like another researcher from America. I read her book years ago. She was interviewing women in UP and asking, "Do you love your husband?" And she said most of them never even thought of it. They never even thought of it. It's just like, "Do you breathe air?" or something like that. And why do you love? And then, "Oh, because my husband." And the researcher thought, that's a stupid answer. She's stupid herself. She doesn't understand the culture or anything. So why do you go on pilgrimage? And it's not something to be thought. It's just something you do, that's all. It's part of our dharma. Why do you do it? Everyone does it, and for generations, everyone's done it. There's no question. It's not that you, like in the West, you have to think, why are you doing this? Choose what you want to do. You do it. Of course you do it. It's auspicious. Everyone does it, and you go, and you take darshan. You give something in the box, and you take some prasad. And you just do it. That's all. And understand, that's in human life, this is the kind of thing we do. Just like, padau nrinang to druma janma bhajo kshetrani nanu vrajato harerio. Who does not go to the holy places of pilgrimage, connected with Hari, with Vishnu, is not even really a human being at all. You might as well just take birth as a tree if you don't do such things. So if one thinks about it, what is it? That for purification, people may go with a specific idea, material benefit, spiritual benefit. They like to see, if there are holy people there, they may like to see them. That's less nowadays, because maybe because there are not so many holy men in holy places as there used to be. Or maybe the respect for them has gone down. In holy places previously, there'd be many, many brahmanas, and people used to respect them. The respect has gone down a lot, probably largely because most brahmanas don't live as brahmanas, but there are still, in many holy places, there are people who still live as brahmanas. We were just discussing yesterday, or you were telling me, how in Mantralayam, that's another place people go for material benefit, very much for material benefits, for darshan of Raghavendra Swami, although he himself was a very philosophical person. He wrote commentaries and very, very great sadhu. But he specifically decided to, when he left this world, he decided to stay also and not die. And he's sitting there in his Vrindavanam, as they call it. He's sitting there and people come for whatever they want. In Mantralayam, they're still following the same old traditions that they followed of learning and culture, everything. Yeah, it's some little differences. They have lights in their rooms, electric lights and electric fans. And a few things like that. But basically it's the same culture going on. But people, they don't respect so much. I had an experience. I went to Mantralayam twice. The first time I went, I was taking a bus party around distributing books. And I thought, well, I'm in India distributing books. We can go to all the holy places on the way. Why not? We visit all the holy places, do Harinam, have a little program, distribute some books. Bliss. So I went there and... So I wanted to sell. I only had Hindi Bhagavatams, and it wasn't complete. I think it was only up to the fifth canto. So I wanted to sell them whatever books I had. I only had in Hindi. So I met what are they called there? The Mahant, the Swami. They're actually married people, I think. Is it? The managers, yeah, anyway. They had long beards and long hair like this. And, not sanya, and white, dressed in white. So I said, I'd like to, you can take this. And then they started talking all Mayavad at me. And I was firing back at them. And after some time, okay, we'll take it. Because they wanted to see if I was just selling books, or I knew something was in them. And if I'd have agreed with their Mayavad, they'd have probably chased me out of town. Get out of here. It's, Madhvas, they're very, very staunch, isn't it, against Mayavad. So that was a nice experience. I also had an experience there the first time I was there. This is, anyone who's lived in India or attempted to preach Krishna consciousness anywhere in the world, they have so many interesting stories to tell in their lives. But I was just walking, and it must have been more developed now, but there was just a small place there, and I was just walking on the road there, and there was a house, a door was open, and someone was sitting inside, one man sitting inside, and he called me inside. So I went inside, and he was an astrologer, and he looked at me. He said, I'm an astrologer, and there's something that you want to do which you're not able to do, but don't worry, you'll be able to do it soon. And what it was, I wanted to write books, but I was getting so many headaches. I couldn't write, and I'm in the same position again now. It's come back again. At least I'm able to do something, some work. But at that time it was really very bad. He was smoking also, by the way, which is unexpected. So he said that. I was just astonished. He didn't take my chart, look at my hand or anything like that. But he asked if he could take an imprint of my hand, and I said, I'm not very interested. He said, no, it's for me, just I like to study. So he took an imprint of my hand, and I went on, and never saw or heard of him again. Like that. There's so many wonderful things in India up to the present day. This, what is that, Bhrigu part? In different parts of India you'll find people. You go into them and you go and see them and you don't have to ask them anything. They just tell you everything about your life and everything coming up and everything. They said, oh, they see the time of day, the date, okay. And pull out the, and it's all there. That should be highlighted also, if you want to show reincarnation. There are higher powers which interface with this world. That could also be highlighted. Something I saw on the internet yesterday, first time, Muslim astrologer. You're not supposed to believe in that, right? Though again, telling stories here. In Bangladesh, one of the first people we met was, I can't remember his name now. But he was a big famous astrologer, Hindu, but most of his clients were Muslims. For business, he said, politicians, business people. I'm not sure if he said for marriage. I don't know if they do for marriage. I'm not sure. Anyway, Hare Krishna. Tirthaka. Krishna kindly makes the tirthas available so that we can come closer to him. And I want to discuss that more in the next session. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Gaur Nithai ki jai, Tirthaka ki jai, Hare Krishna.